I pledge allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The first item on the agenda is a pleasure of having Red Ribbon Week Best Decorated School Contest. And Janet Pollard.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and the supervisors and everybody in chambers. Thank you for being here this morning. On behalf of Staff of County Citizens Against Substance Abuse, I am honored to come and present awards for the Best Decorated School Competition in 2006. We had over 30 schools participate this year in the countywide competition. We had one that had to drop out because they had some other things going on at the time, homecoming and things like that. But we had a very good participation. We had a lot of new schools come on board this year. And I just want to share with you kind of the focus of our group for Staff Up County Citizens Against Substance Abuse. Our goal is to promote substance abuse education in the county to support drug and alcohol-free activities for youth and their families. We really want to raise the awareness in the community of the problem of drug abuse and the problem that connects with youth crime. So that's really our focus and our main goal and objective of this committee. We would like to, at this time, present awards because we have several schools here in attendance today. So we're going to start with the elementary schools, and we're going to start off with honorable mentions. Thank you. We're going to start off with Stockard Coffee Elementary School was our honorable mention. Unfortunately, Stockard Coffee was not able to be here this morning, but we wanted to recognize them anyway. We actually added a new category this year because the competition was so stiff, we felt that many schools deserve that extra recognition, so we added the honorable mention category. So we would like to recognize Stockard Coffee. For third place, we have Carol Fowler Elementary School. And unfortunately, Ms. Ferreira, who was here this morning, had to leave because something happened to her son. So they were here this morning, but she had to leave. Third place also receives $100 for their school to help support their Red Ribbon celebration for the following year in 2007. So we look forward to having the schools come back year after year to support drug-free events at their school. Second place in elementary is Hunt Elementary School. And I'm going to have you guys come up over here. Hunt Elementary School is not shy. They have won first place before, and they have been recognized several years in a row for first, second, and third place as winners. So congratulations, Hunt Elementary School. If you guys would just stand over here. They receive $150 for their school, so there are some good incentives for participating in this program. And then first place is Vaughn Runner Elementary School. For our first place winners, we have a perpetual plaque that they get to hang up at their school all year long to recognize the fact that they were the first place winners in the Best Decorated School Competition. Please.
I just thought I'd come down and
shoot. I appreciate that. I think that's great.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you. I also want to say this is something that's not put on by teachers at the school. This is something that the teachers really This is something that the teachers really get the students involved in, so it's really student-driven at each one of the different schools. So this is something that all these students that are here today really need to be recognized for, because it's their efforts that recognize them when the committee sat down to look at the different things that they did at their school. So on with the next honors. As Honorable mentioned, we'd like to recognize for the middle school and junior high category of Dutcher Middle School. Oh, good. Thank you. Oh, please. Yes, you get to stand. Thank you very much. You guys did a great job. For third place, we'd like to recognize Mark Twain Junior High School. Could you just line up right here? You guys did a great job. You should be very, very proud of yourself. For second place, we'd like to recognize Salida Middle School. And unfortunately, Salida Middle School was not able to be here this morning either. So with that said, we'd like to recognize our first place winner, Waterford Middle School. I want to tell you guys, the judges were very, very impressed with all of these schools, and they were very impressed with the middle schools, the effort that was put in, as well as the elementary and the high schools. So this really was a stiff competition this year. Congratulations. Thank you to you all. Congratulations. Okay, our next category is the high school division. And for honorable mention, we'd like to recognize Waterford High School. Thank you, Kat. You're very welcome. You guys did a great job. You did. Okay, for third place, we'd like to recognize Downey High School. And again, Downey was not able to be here this morning, but we still wanted to recognize them. For second place, we would like to recognize Turlock High School. Turlock actually did something really unique. They partnered with the elementary school next door to them this year with their Red Ribbon committee. So it was very, very, they did a very good job. Julian School, that's right. They partner with Julian School. So congratulations, you guys. You can stand up there. Okay. And our first place winner for high school division is Oakdale High School. Oakdale High School was one of those schools that went above and beyond. I don't know if you guys remember, but it was a really windy day. There was a couple of really good windy days that week, And a lot of the displays blew down that the students had put up. Well, Oakdale High School went back out there and they took all the stuff that had blown down and put it all back up so that everybody in the community could see that they really support being a drug-free school. So we were very, very, very impressed with that. So congratulations, you guys. Congratulations to you all. You all should be very, very proud of yourselves because, like I said, it was very difficult this year in the judging. So all of us judging the schools really took a long time deciding who was going to be the winner. So it was a very stiff competition. So we look forward to seeing what you guys are going to do next year. This gentleman over here who's been distributing plaques and information, this is Aaron Raving from Stanislaus County Office of Education. And Aaron, would you like to say anything?
I'm good. Thanks.
He's the treasurer of our committee. So, again, we just appreciate the opportunity to come here today and recognize these winners. So, thank you again. Thank you, supervisors. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. And thank you, Christine, for helping. Really appreciate it.
Turn next to the public comment period, and I have one request from Aaron Smith. Aaron Smith here? Oh, there he is.
Good morning, Chairman Simon, honorable members of the board. As you recall, I'm Aaron Smith with Safe Access Now. We're an advocacy group for medical marijuana patients. I was here back in October when the board voted to delay implementation of the medical marijuana ID program until a ruling out of the San Diego v. California Normal case was resolved. And I'm happy to say that a ruling came down last week, which I'm sure you're aware of, that basically the judge ruled that issuance of the medical marijuana ID card does not conflict with federal law, doesn't amount to a violation of federal law. And as you already know, not issuing the cards would be a violation of state law. So I'm here today to ask that we bring the ID card program back up on the agenda in light of this recent ruling and, of course, implement it as quickly as possible so that patients living in Stanislaus County would not have to worry about being arrested only to have their cases later thrown out of court. And, of course, so that law enforcement officers don't have to spend their time spinning their wheels, checking patient documentation on the side of the street, have a uniform program to verify legitimacy of qualified medical marijuana patients here. And I have a copy of the ruling in case you didn't get an opportunity to see it. And we'd like to hear some feedback as to when this item will be back before this board and when we can expect to see this program implemented locally. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Krosnick?
Mr. Chair, members of the board, while the opinion has come down and our office has reviewed it, it is not finally decided whether or not that case will be appealed. We've attempted to contact the parties and the number of counties that were involved in the action, and we've not heard from them yet. So as soon as we find out whether or not this action is final, we will advise the board to take appropriate action.
That's correct, and we're not sure obviously also whether it's going to be appealed. But one thing I would keep in mind is that the success of an appeal in this case is the chances of that are just negligible. It would be a futile attempt for any of these three counties to take this to an appellate court. The appellate courts have heard medical marijuana cases over and over again, several cases, and consistently have upheld the rights for patients in California to obtain and use and transport medical marijuana. So this law is here to stay. I would hope that they don't spend their precious resources trying to fight this. Again, I don't know. But just 2 weeks ago, the California Supreme Court upheld the right of patients to transport marijuana without having to face trafficking charges. So our courts are pretty friendly to this law.
Well, we appreciate your legal advice, but our experience has been that there are always appeals and they aren't always confirmed.
Thank you.
We turn next to item 7. Consent calendar.
Yes,
have some changes in the consent calendar.
I do have two changes that I would request. The first is that we pull item A5, the board calendar, for a separate vote following the adoption of the balance of the calendar. Second is that we pull item B1. I do have a change to make to it, and then would request that you act separately on that one as well.
Okay, so we need a motion for the balance of those.
Also move.
We have a second. Motion to second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So ordered. B5?
Excuse me, A5.
I mean A5.
Approval on that.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion to second. All those in favor?
Aye.
The next one was...
No.
No.
You have another one?
Yeah. We have the no voters. We have a 3-2 vote on the calendar. And then the final one is item D1, which is New Williamson Act.
Wait a minute. Let's go back again. I called for a vote, and there were 3 ayes and 2 noes. I failed to notify that. All right. Thank you.
That's on the calendar.
Oh, 5. Okay.
Yeah. And the final item is item D1, the New Williamson Act contracts. We are going to ask that you act today for contracts 2007-02, 03, and 04 that we remove from consideration 2007-01 in today's vote.
So do we have a motion?
Motion to adopt.
Second. Motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So ordered. Next item is the redevelopment agency schedule matter.
Good morning, Supervisor Simon and members of the agency, Jim Duvall, Deputy Director, Redevelopment Agency, and with me this morning is Anna Rocha, also staff to your Redevelopment Agency. First item on the agenda would be the consent calendar.
Okay. We need those items that are marked with an asterisk, minutes and acceptance of the financial report.
So moved.
Second.
Motion is second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So ordered. Okay, and?
Yes, and then item 6B would be presented to you by Anna Rocha.
Good morning, agency members, chairman. I don't know, we have a PowerPoint. Just a second. What we have before you this morning is a report prepared in accordance to Section 33080.1 of the Health and Safety Code for the redevelopment. What we'll be presenting today is activities for the redevelopment agency involving basically housing and blight reduction activities for the agency. This report is created and filed with the State Controller's Office and HCD. Yeah, first item. housing activities for the agency over the last fiscal year. We've continued with our program, the down payment assistance program. 13 loans were given in financial assistance to low-income residents in the unincorporated areas to purchase their first home. Second program that we've continued is the minor home repair program, and that program again is to deal with health and safety issues and for residents in unincorporated areas. Minor loans were assisted, low interest loans. Next item is the major housing rehabilitation program. What this program offers is up to $45,000 in rehab money, again for unincorporated areas, homes in unincorporated areas. And next, blight reduction activities, community cleanups. Throughout the fiscal year, we had several out in the Shackelford neighborhood area, South Ceres, and the community of Keys. What we do is partner with the Department of Environmental Resources and code enforcement and do basically a half-day cleanup out in the community. This year, we picked up with the community over 100 tons, about 1,000 tires, and we still got a lot of work to do next year. Next on the list is strategic planning. Agency staff has assisted with the Pearl Landing Air Facility project area as staff to the steering committee. Also on the strategic planning side of the redevelopment agency, we've begun work with the development of a strategic plan for revitalization for the airport neighborhood. What this consists of is infrastructure design, and also promoting services for that unincorporated area of the airport neighborhood. We've also begun partnering with the city of Modesto and their departments in housing and code enforcement and the police department. So that will be an upcoming project over the next fiscal year. Next on our agency report is infrastructure. The Key Storm Drain, phase one has been, is in the process of a storm drain pumping station is in the process of being constructed. Next phase will be the installation of storm drain, and that will be over the next fiscal year. The next project is a Shackelford sewer project, and that we still continue in offering assistance to sewer hookups for that community. So, economic development for the agency. What we've helped this year is facilitate several meetings out in the Crow's Landing Road business area. We've helped facilitate meetings involving the Enterprise Zone and the benefits of the county being in Enterprise Zone 40. We had several meetings with business owners and we conducted the workshops in English and in Spanish. And thanks to the Alliance, we offered up these informational workshops out there. Also, the agency is one of the lead partners for the San Saus Workforce Development Collaborative, and what we've done is we've continued to implement and support initiatives involving programs that help low-income residents find higher-paid jobs. So, that concludes our activities report for the agency for last fiscal year. If there's any questions?
Any questions, Supervisor O'Brien?
Just have one question. A little more information on the down payment assistance loans.
Sure.
Your 13 loans for the year. What was the limiting factor there? So was it funds? Was it finding homes that fell in the price value?
It was a combination. The supply of available affordable housing, and also a lot of factors in eligibility for people. We look at credit reports, we look at their history with payments, so it's a contributing of different factors.
Do we still have a sizable sum of money that's available for down payments?
Yes, we have plenty of money for the
just
down payments.
Finding the right price homes and the people
yeah. Problems. Mostly it's been the supply of homes.
Very good. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Next item.
Yes, Chairman Simon, members of the agency.
We need a motion to accept, excuse me.
Oh, we need a motion then.
Second.
Motion second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 On behalf of agency staff and your colleagues,
The Executive Director, Ron Freitas, will present this next item. Thank you.
Yes, it's with great honor that I'm able to present to you a plaque as you host your last redevelopment agency meeting for Chairman Simon. And it's also with some sadness because you've been with us since its inception. In 1991, the Santa Fe County Redevelopment Agency was formed, and at that time, you were also the first chairman of the Redevelopment Agency. I'm not sure if you remember that, but...
Clearly.
One of the things I think you will remember, though, is that you also presided over the largest public hearing this county has ever held.
Now, I do recall that.
That was held over at Modesto Center Plaza, and with about 1,100 people in attendance, and also a simultaneous translation in Spanish.
That the longest meeting I ever attended in my life.
It was. We're sorry for that, but it did get an agency adopted, an agency that in its inception, we thought we were going to do some great things. We were anticipating a great amount of increment coming in, and the economy went down into the tank. So it took us a long time to get back up. And also it took us a long time to develop a trust from the people. And through Jim, through your board, and your constant support, I think, have developed that trust. And with that, we thank you for continuously supporting us and supporting the programs, and for staff, we are very thankful for your support. And with that, I'd like to present to you a plaque. This plaque is presented to Chairman Ray Simon of the Redevelopment Agency. And Mr. Simon served as chair in 1991, 1994, 1999, 2003, and 2006. And for that, we are thankful and wish you good luck. You have, I'm sure, many plaques. And well, thank you.
It's my pleasure to receive this plaque and to thank you, Ron, for and Jim, for your thoughtfulness in recognizing those years. As you know, I've had, and I think I've communicated to you many times, the utmost respect for you and your office, and the utmost respect for the work that you do and the work that's been done on the Redevelopment Agency. I know I've signed multitude of documents bringing millions of dollars into the county that you people worked on, and the county is much better off for your being here. So if I have the opportunity to come back and give you both a plaque, I will. Thank you so much. We have a public forum next. Is there anyone in the audience who's here to speak on any item that's not published on the agenda? In that case, we then adjourn the Redevelopment Agency back to the board. Thank you for your report. And we turn to item 7. Mr. Patterson?
Good morning, Chairman Simon, members of the board, Mr. Robinson and Mr. Krosnick. We will have a PowerPoint, but I want to just open with a few remarks. Thank you. A few remarks. First, in 1996, Congress passed, and then President at the time, President Clinton, signed legislation that would be in effect for the next 7 years. It was directed to ending welfare as we know it. And that passage was really widely known in our society as welfare reform.
it was really seen as the conclusion of a lengthy and sometimes sort of nasty and spirited debate about the role of government in providing cash assistance to poor children, to poor families with young children. On one side, you had the liberal critics of the legislation saying that changing the requirements that had been in place since the 50s and 60s and requiring work and training for mothers would cause neglect of a large number of children, and that neglect would eventually overwhelm the public foster care system. Conservative critics, on the other hand, of that legislation said that work and training requirements were certainly not enough, and that the welfare rolls would not be reduced, and that this multi-generational cycle of welfare recipiency and dependency would be continued. And I'm really happy to report that neither of those dire predictions were true, nor have they been anywhere close to being true. And in this journey that we've been on in implementing welfare reform, I think all sides of the political spectrum and social think tanks and groups like that have largely judged implementation of welfare reform to be successful. And perhaps the secret weapon that people don't talk about enough is that there was federal flexibility in the legislation. Since 1996, the states and the counties have been implementers of the broad federal guidance that came with welfare reform, as opposed to the previous set of overseers of very stringent federal rules and regulations. And as a result, it created a lot of local thinking with my predecessors and with the partners of other agencies about how we would assist parents in becoming self-sufficient and helping families towards achieving their goals. We know that it created a difference in Stanislaus County. In Community Services Agency, we started to behave differently about how we selected the staff, trained staff, how we oriented them to their work. We know that it started to create a difference in how we engaged and interacted with our customers, I think with more respect and dignity and trying to understand their individual needs. And it created the basis for us forming a whole set of partnerships that didn't exist when we started this back in the late 90s. Now you roll that forward, and in 2005, Congress passed and then President Bush signed the Deficit Reduction Act. Embedded within the Deficit Reduction Act were provisions that amended what we know as welfare reform, and then it reauthorized certain provisions of the 1996 legislation. Part of that legislation set new requirements for both at the state level, at the county level, and for the receivers of cash aid. And California then to align with this Deficit Reduction Act requirements passed Senate Bill 1808. Part of the implementation of Senate Bill 1808 instructs myself and my colleagues around the state as county welfare directors to brief our boards of supervisors on the provisions of our county welfare to work plan. And so this addendum that you're going to see is in essence an update and a rethink of our 1998 strategy. Now with me to provide that briefing today are Kathy Harwell. Kathy's the Assistant Director of the StanWorks Division at CSA, and Nicole Pollack is a Senior Manager in that division. They're going to walk you through what's been accomplished, what the new federal requirements are, and what program adjustments we're making to meet those requirements. We welcome your observations and questions as we go along. So, Nicole and Kathy?
Thank you. Good morning, County Supervisors. Let me just wish you good morning one more time and we'll get started. First, I'd like to introduce you to the Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Reconciliation Act. This is Public Law 104. Thank you. Public Law 104-193, and this was enacted in 1996, otherwise known as welfare reform. The acronym is PERORA, and really what it did is it abolished the Aid to Families with Dependent Children, otherwise known as the AFDC program, and formed TANF, which fundamentally changed the structure and parameters for the continuance of cash aid. Two of the conditions of TANF include the establishment of a 5-year maximum lifetime limit to receive cash assistance and also the beginning of the Welfare to Work program to assist customers participate in a work activity with the goal of family self-sufficiency and the maintenance of two-parent families. The broader goal is to model the ethos of continuous self-improvement through thereby improving the well-being of children by reducing and eliminating poverty. California Work Opportunity and Responsibility to Kids program, otherwise known as CalWORKS, was really California's response to the federal law, PERORA. The Welfare to Work plan was approved by the Santa Fe County Board of Supervisors on December 16, 1997, and CalWORKS did require that each county develop a plan on Welfare to Work implementation. We actually in Santa Fe County implemented STANWORKS in 1998, and some of the challenges in implementation and the successful outcomes include a reclassification of what was then the eligibility worker series, and we reclassified that series to family service specialists. We had the challenge internally at CSA of training staff to not only process the benefit payments, but really restructure the way that they worked with our customers to a more of a coaching and counseling model using a strength-based approach to guide the customers towards self-sufficiency. We partnered with Modesto Junior College to establish on-site classes in human services so that staff can continue their education and better understand and guide their customers. We expected our customers to improve their job-related skills through continuous learning, and we wanted our staff to have the same opportunities to increase their professional skills through continuous learning and also model that behavior for our customers. One tangible success of that is a partnership with the Alliance WorkNet and Goodwill Industries to implement what we call the Clerical Assistance Program. What happens with this program is Welfare to Work customers attend clerical training on site at CSA at Hackett through the Goodwill Industries for a portion of the day. And the other portion of the day, customers work at CSA and are mentored in work readiness skills, and they're able to practice the clerical skills that they've learned in class earlier that day. As a result, many of our staff members are former CSA Welfare to Work customers. With the requirement to develop a Welfare to Work plan, STANWORKS has achieved the following objectives as set forth in the Welfare to Work plan. The first is promoting employment, and on an average, we place customers in approximately 200 jobs per month. We ensure the provision of needed services, and also we need to provide a consistent message of self-sufficiency. This is important because our customers enter the job market, many of them at entry-level wages, and our Welfare to Work customers may be working but still eligible for and receiving cash aid. The customers still need the support such as food stamps, Medi-Cal, and child care assistance. We need to continue to encourage the customers toward either increasing their hours or taking advantage of additional training and obtaining new job skills in order to promote their job stability and also their wage base. Creating community partnerships is, I think that CSA has been very successful in meeting this goal. And we've shown that several times to the board. I know that Kim presented community partnerships to the board, and now they're listed on the county website. And we'll continue to highlight some partnerships later on in this presentation. Assessing families using a holistic approach really works better by trying to match customers' interests, skills, and abilities with the jobs and training instead of just being paternalistic and placing them, for example, in hauling off garbage, which was the fear when all of this started. We assess families' needs and appropriately refer to other agencies to strengthen the family and improve the well-being of children. And just a couple of examples include referrals to Haven for domestic violence counseling and behavioral health and recovery services for substance abuse treatment. Reducing the number of families dependent on public assistance was also a goal of our original Welfare to Work plan, and we'll talk about this a little bit more on the next slide. This is our welfare-to-work impact analysis, and the graphs depict the CalWORKs average monthly cases, and that is the graph on the top, as well as compared to the Santa Fe County total population, and that would be the lower graph. The graphs also show the impact of welfare-to-work on the local community from 1996, which is the base year for welfare-to-work legislation, through 2006. So just kind of guiding you through some of the successes, the total population of Santa Fe County has continued to rise over the last decade, as you can see in the trend. In 1996, the population of Santa Fe County was 411,258, and I know those numbers can be somewhat small to read. In 2006, the population of Santa Fe County is 504,482. This is a change of 22.7% in the overall county population. Taking a look at CalWORKs, the peak year in terms of CalWORKs caseload was the year 1996 with an average caseload of 12,217 customers. The impact of welfare-to-work results in a dramatic decline in caseload average with a low point in 2003 of 8,211 cases. We have seen a slight increase in caseload and a leveling out over the past 2 years, and we attribute this increase in part to the overall population growth in Stanislaus County. The rate of change in the CalWORKs caseload from 1996 to 2006 is a decrease of 25.1%, and this downward trend contrasts sharply with the 22.7% increase in Stanislaus County population. The impact of welfare to work represents a decline in the rate of CalWORKs cases to the total population. And the ratio stood at 3% in 1996 and is now at only a 1.8%. And for comparison purposes, if we assume CalWORKs caseloads maintained a rate of 3%, and that's of the total Santa Fe County population through 2006, then the 2006 CalWORKs caseload would have averaged 14,986 if it maintained that 3% level. But actually, you could see that it's at 9,157 customers.
The Deficit Reduction Act was implemented in 2006. The impact of the Deficit Reduction Act was to reauthorize TANF. However, TANF legislation expired in 2003, and it took 7 extensions to reauthorize TANF. Some of the challenges that occurred in the reauthorization of TANF and disagreement in Congress occurred over child care funding, whether partial participation versus full participation should be counted in work requirements, whether states should receive incentives for high performance in the areas of employment entry, job retention, and increased earnings. The House and Senate both agreed on the elimination of two-parent welfare to work participation rates. However, they disagreed on how quickly the work participation rate should be increased and whether states should receive partial credit for part-time work of their participants in the welfare to work program. Congress also disagreed on family sanctions and whether states could use maintenance of effort dollars to support families and children of parents who had been sanctioned. A GAO study released in August 2005, the United States Government Accountability Office, their report to the Chairman's Subcommittee on Human Resources through the House of Representatives entitled Welfare Reform, Health and Human Services Should Exercise Oversight to Help Ensure TANF Work Participation is Measured Consistently Across States, dramatically impacted the effect of TANF reauthorization. The study recommended a revision of the caseload reduction credits that states were receiving, as well as it recommended clearly defined work activities and measurement requirements. As a result, the changes that occurred in the Deficit Reduction Act include work participation rates effective 2001 that require 50% of all families to participate in the welfare to work program. This rate increases to 70% in the year 2007. In addition, it included a 90% work participation rate for two-parent families although Congress both agreed, both in the House and Senate, that this participation rate should be eliminated. Other changes to the TANF program included the inclusion of sanctioned, exempt, and safety net customers in the work participation rate. States were allowed flexibility in the design of their welfare-to-work programs and their CalWORKs programs. State flexibility included excluding specific populations from inclusion in the federal work participation rate if the states were not claiming dollars to federal, were not claiming federal dollars, and were only claiming to state maintenance of effort dollars. This flexibility was eliminated. In addition, the elimination of the caseload reduction credit occurred, and we'll demonstrate for you later in this presentation how that impacts California. New definitions for allowable work activities were also implemented. California was one that had defined work activities very specific. In some states, like New York, customers were allowed to provide and shop for food for family members, and that was counted as a work activity. Others were able to go and provide care in homes for individuals who were unable to take care of their needs, and those were included as work activities. California did not define their work activities as liberally, and so this does not impact our state as greatly. There were new requirements for reporting and verifying work activity participation, and there are now penalties for failure to meet the new work requirements. Assembly Bill 1808 is California's response to the Deficit Reduction Act. The primary part about Assembly Bill 1808 is that California worked to preserve the core elements of California's CalWORKs program and the Welfare to Work program. California determines success by basing the program on family and individual needs, not establishing a cookie-cutter approach. California provided flexibility in developing action plans for individuals and families that focus on moving families to self-sufficiency and that include activities focused around domestic violence, substance abuse, mental health counseling, and vocational training. California focused on preserving a safety net so that children of adults who were sanctioned or timed out who had met their five-year limit continue to receive cash assistance. It also provided for reasonable and necessary exemptions. If an individual is disabled, they will be exempt from participating in the Welfare to Work program. Provided for exemptions if there was inability to access child care and if transportation took longer than 2 hours to get to an activity. These exemptions are beyond the federal guidelines for exemptions. Assembly Bill 1808 also adopted pay-for-performance standards. Through AB 1808, $40 million has been set aside for counties to meet three independent measures. The first one focused on the employment rate of county CalWORKs cases. So as customers become employed and receive CalWORKs, counties can receive incentive funds for increasing the number of customers on CalWORKs working. We know that in the Valley, we have significant challenge in having jobs that exceed the minimum rate, minimum hourly rate. The second paper performance standard is federal participation rate adjusted for the county CalWORKs program. California's Welfare to Work program and CalWORKs program provide for opportunities that the federal work participation program does not include. So, to meet performance standards, California counties can have their performance measured by a modified federal participation rate. This rate excludes individuals who are exempt, and it excludes individuals who are participating in substance abuse, mental health, and domestic violence activities. Those activities are not countable under federal law. The third measure, third paper performance measure, includes the percentage of CalWORKs cases that have earned income 3 months after no longer receiving cash assistance. counties can receive incentive payments for increasing job retention of individuals who have left CalWORKs programs. Assembly Bill 1808 also eliminates the second and third stage sanction. It makes it easier for our customers to enter back into the Welfare to Work program after they have been in a non-compliant stage. And it establishes a CalWORKs County peer review process to ensure that counties are sharing best practices across the state. Lastly, Assembly Bill 1808 requires counties to submit a revised plan to demonstrate a focused effort on improving California's work participation rate in light of the elimination of the caseload credit. Counties have been asked to submit a revised addendum to the Welfare to Work plan, originally submitted when welfare reform was implemented in California. The plans identify current and future methods for addressing upfront engagement, re-engagement of non-compliant and sanctioned customers, strategies for achieving full engagement of individuals. Many of our individuals participate partially. They're not meeting the 32 hours or 35-hour work requirements, but they are participating. So we're looking for activities and developing activities that will encourage them to participate fully. Assembly Bill, the revised plan also requires counties to develop outcome measurements and requires collaboration and partnership with the community organizations. So what is the concern? With the reduction of California's work, with reduction of the caseload credit, California is required as a state to meet a 50% work participation rate. And that participation rate increases 5% up to 70% in 2007. Currently, California's participation rate for federal fiscal year 2004 was only 23.1%. California's met the work participation requirements at the federal level based upon caseload reduction. Nicole showed you Stanislaus County was a part in contributing to California's caseload reduction. It's very alarming and very concerning how California is going to move to meeting a 50% participation rate when in federal fiscal year 2004, the entire state only achieved a 23% participation rate. How does Stanislaus County measure up to the state? This graph demonstrates Stanislaus County's performance from fiscal year 1999-2000 through fiscal year 2005-06. In the blue is Stanislaus County's work participation rate, and in the magenta is state of California. As a county, we have continued to sustain work participation levels that exceed the state standard. Although customers face major challenges to participation, including access to childcare, transportation, domestic violence, substance abuse, and high unemployment rates in the valley. We've been able to meet and exceed state rates due to committed staff, the partnerships we have formed, our focus on family, the use of multidisciplinary teams, and other partnerships. However, there is a continuous challenge ahead of us. Today in Stanislaus County, our total enrollees equal 52%. Now, what that attributes is individuals who are enrolled in and participating in the Welfare to Work program, but that does not mean that those individuals, each and every one, are participating to the 32-hour or 35-hour rate. Stanislaus County has 11% of the Welfare to Work population that are exempt from participating in the program. This 11% is now included in the work participation rate at the federal level. The state rate for exemptions is 20%. Next. Our non-compliance rate is at 8%. Our sanction rate is at 16%, and our safety net rate is at 10%. All of these are included now in our work participation rate as we move forward.
I would like to take you through what our current welfare-to-work customer experiences as they enter the welfare-to-work program and continue through the welfare-to-work program with the Community Services Agency. Diversion is an activity that provides up to 3 months of cash diversion payments as an alternative to temporary assistance for needy families. And these are for customers applying for assistance who are labeled as job-ready. Diversion services also includes referring the customer to partner agencies for intensive job development services. And we're looking at this as an alternative to traditional cash grant TANF. There are a group of customers who apply for cash assistance or TANF due to a job loss or other catastrophic event in their lives that makes them believe that they really don't have any other alternatives. The customer base may possess skills and knowledge that would make them immediately eligible as well as receptive to work placement if given the direct connection to intensive job development program. These individuals may be considered job ready if they possess the soft skills or work readiness skills acquired from long-term or regular and consistent employment, as well as technical skills that employers seek and desire. Providing diversion services may prevent customers from exhausting their cash assistance time limits when an alternative is available. Approval of CalWORKs is also, when a customer is approved for CalWORKs, they also receive food stamps and Medi-Cal many times. And approval of CalWORKs means that the customers have also cooperated with the Department of Child Support Services in declaring paternity and also signing a statement allowing a family a $50 disregard of child support collections. So the family will receive $50. The rest of the money is recouped and utilized to pay back the cash aid that the family uses. In addition, the customer has agreed to the 5-year lifetime maximum of CalWORKs assistance and agreed to participate in the Welfare to Work program. The appraisal appointment is an upfront evaluation of customer strengths and also includes early identification of barriers to employment, for example, learning disabilities, mental health, domestic violence. Welfare to Work orientation is the next service and it's contracted and delivered by partner agencies. Orientation services inform customers about employment, training, and supportive services such as transportation and childcare. Job club and job search is traditionally the next activity where the customer is in a classroom setting utilized for teaching job search techniques, interviewing skills. The intent of Job Club is to acclimate customers to the world of employment. Assessment would be the next activity. It identifies the strengths of the customers. The family service specialist and customer work collaboratively to develop a plan and explore opportunities to assist the customer in achieving self-sufficiency. The next appropriate activity is then scheduled, and a full array of services is available for the customer and family service specialist. Some include adult basic education, vocational training, and work experience. Success for our customers in attaining self-sufficiency is totally dependent upon partnerships between many organizations throughout Stanislaus County. Before you are just a few of our partners. We partner with community-based organizations, nonprofits, county departments, and educational institutions. And I'd like to share with you one success story. We have a customer, and this is her story. Before enrolling at Modesto Junior College, my self-esteem was not nearly non-existent. I had always found employment, but the minimum wage jobs were not enough to support my family. I ended up homeless, living out of my car with my 2-year-old son. My lifestyle was less than desirable, and it was hard to find a way out. I'd also experienced domestic violence. In December of 2002, I finally realized that I needed to change everything about my life. I had lost my car and everything else of any value. All I had left was a yearning for something better, my son, and willingness to try anything that made a difference. I was terrified of the unknown, but I was even more terrified that I would continue providing my children
was less than what they deserved. The biggest step I took, and probably the scariest, was enrolling in college for the first time. Since I had no transportation, I rode the city bus to college. I met with my CalWORKs case manager and made plans for my future. All the hard work I have put in has paid off tenfold. I have managed to maintain a 4.0 GPA, and I'm looking forward to graduating. During the time that I have been on aid and attending Modesto Junior College and receiving other supportive services, I have obtained my own two-bedroom apartment, I have a nice car, and a new job working in the field in which I'm studying. I'm no longer worried about being able to provide for my children. I know that our future is brighter because of my education. Words can't express the gratitude I feel toward all those who helped me achieve these goals. The CalWORKs program helped me get my tuition paid, pay for childcare, be able to borrow for books, obtain grants, and eventually obtain scholarships. However, every fear and concern that I had was taken care of by the CalWORKs program. If I needed a service they couldn't provide, they would direct me to someone who would. The CalWORKs addendum to the state plan describes strategies that will be used to achieve an increased work participation rate, and CSA will implement the following strategies in doing so. In seeking opportunities for new and expanded partnerships, we hope to find new and improved activities that capture customers' interests, and also they will benefit from enhanced quality of services being provided. Increasing upfront engagement strategies, welfare-to-work customers will be enrolled in upfront welfare-to-work activities, minimizing initial engagement time frames. And they will be provided these services during intake appointments. And finally, increasing re-engagement strategies, we plan on expanding the use of our multidisciplinary teams so that we can increase the intensity of services that are being provided.
Thanks, Kathy and Nicole. Just a couple of closing thoughts. Our TANF customers really do face a lot of significant life challenges. They don't seek to be on cash aid. That wasn't their plan. Something went wrong, and we see that often in the form of domestic violence, disability, homelessness, and substance abuse. And so we have built our interventions around the whole person, not just handing them a card and saying, here's the job or work you should go to. We think that we've had success through building relationships and understanding the unique needs of our customers. When somebody does leave cash aid because of employment, they're not stepping dramatically out of poverty. They are going to work, they're being very responsible, but by and large, they're still at least for a time dependent on Medi-Cal, food stamps, and our child care supports for which they're eligible. And so for our customers who do achieve employment, I think most of them would tell you that this struggle to become self-sufficient isn't an overnight thing. That's why we stress with them the need for lifelong learning, taking the ground level job, but learning it well, becoming valuable to your employer, and being able to move on to other promotions as you gain value to an employer and you gain your own life experiences. And I think, so it's, becoming employed is not a panacea for them. However, when welfare reform was passed in 96, most of us in the nation saw that we needed to end that multi-generational cycle of welfare dependency. And we have many stories of children of our working parents say, good for you, Mom, or good for you, Dad, way to go. They are setting an excellent example that you get up and you go do something with your life every day. And we believe at CSA that multi-generational impact is very, very important, and that while it is a struggle for people in this generation of implementing welfare reform, it may make all the difference for the children who are seeing their parents participate now. And that's just the thoughts I'd like to leave you with. We're frightened about the new challenges. I guess I do need to give you one quote. Federal micromanagement is absurd after a decade of real success in achieving a 60% reduction in welfare. But nevertheless, we do have federal instruction saying, can you do better, can you extend further? And we're up to that challenge, and we will be reporting to you on the future how we do with it.
Thank you very much. Any questions from board members?
Yeah, I have one. You mentioned 207 quite a few times. Okay, that would be this coming year. Okay, what happens if you don't meet the challenges that we just talked about? No, just give me a quick answer, okay? Not a long one, just a quick answer.
The federal government is empowered to impose sanctions on the state of California. If those sanctions were to be imposed, over $168 million in the CalWORKs block grant, a TANF block grant, would not come to the state of California.
Okay.
We believe there'll be corrective action plans.
Okay,
that we can submit.
And you've talked about Assembly Bill, what's it, 1808? That was from the California legislature. And they kind of soft-soaked it one way or the other to make it, this thing work. Is that right?
They
made changes to it.
They made changes to it, and they did that in the original TANF also. However, the state did put into 1808 that they could pass down and would pass down sanctions to the counties that did not meet work participation rates if they received federal sanctions.
Okay, so if the county receives federal sanctions, California, you're out there by yourself then.
The state and the county are out there together, but we could have sanctions imposed on our CalWORKs single block grant.
In all your presentation, what percent are you at right now?
Right now, over 04-05, we were at, I'm sorry, 05-06, we're at 44%.
So you've got to make up 30-some percent to meet the 70.
Right.
I'm trying to break this thing down.
No, you're breaking it down correctly.
Just
the state of California has to go.
So everyone understands what you have to do in this coming year. If you don't do it, then you can lose a lot of money.
The state of California has to have almost a 65.
Well, the state of California got no money. You're not going to get that.
And all indications are that if the state is penalized, that they will apportion the penalties down to the counties based on based on our performance rates. So we're not nearly as in the behind this new requirement as some of our peer counties are, but it's a big enough challenge for us that we need to be very thoughtful about how we
Okay. All I want to do is break it down to people out there that understand what we're talking about. You're either going to make the performance, or you're not. California, what they're going to do is they're going to say, well, we're going to give you some, but you're going to be hurting anyhow. Okay?
Yeah, I neglected to say there's a copy of our amendment attached to the board agenda item, and we would request your approval of that.
Okay. Supervisor DeMartini.
I wanted to ask you some questions about that 11% you said was exempt from the program. Are these are people that are on disability, or what actually are they?
There are actually 11 state criteria for exemption and only two at the federal level. The state allows individuals to be exempt if they have a child under the age of one, if they have a statement from their physician saying that they're unable to work, if they're caring for a disabled child or a disabled household member, if they do not have access to child care, if they have problems with transportation and cannot get to an activity within 2 hours of transportation. Those are the major exemptions in which we can grant to customers so they do not need to participate in the welfare work program.
Do you find that there's a trend for some people to just try and find a way to get on disability and get a doctor to say they can't work anymore? Is that something? I don't want you to meet your goal of sticking everybody on disability this year. That is a concern of mine.
We have a special unit that's a multidisciplinary team composed of social workers and public health nurses. So as we have individuals who identify that they are disabled, we work very actively with those individuals and with their doctors to advocate strongly for SSI. So rather than having someone that's disabled and continue to be exempt from the Welfare to Work program, we work with them to find other alternatives that will support them to be self-sufficient in the future, and it may be through disability insurance.
Okay. It looks like your program's making some difference. You know, it's pretty good work participation rate, and at least you have a fairly flexible program where you're having some pretty good success. But with, you know, there's a labor shortage in this county. I always am surprised when I see our unemployment rate at, right now I think it's 7%. And I have a very difficult time hiring enough people, especially in the summer, to get the crops harvested. Last year we finished up the season in peaches 3 days behind where we should have been. And 3 days behind in peaches is behind, believe me. Different for walnuts and almonds, but in peaches that gets pretty critical. And I just have always had a hard time understanding how you could have so many people on public assistance and the unemployment rate so high, and I'm unable to hardly hire enough people to, on the farm to get things done. Hopefully your program will continue to show success. Now, I'm all for a safety net, but I don't want to see that safety net become a hammock for people.
Any other questions? If not, then we need a motion for approval of the report. I'll make that motion, and good luck.
Thank you.
Motion second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So ordered. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Okay, item E8.
Yes, as Stan and staff move forward, I would like to make a couple comments relative to this item. This is a reorganization that I am extremely excited about. It is an opportunity. I view this as an opportunity for the county to realign its service delivery model to...
Before it starts, we're going to take a 5 minute.
Okay.
Just at ease for a minute. We will go into this next item, item 7. No, item 8.
Yes, and I will say that I am really pleased to be able to introduce this twice today. I am that excited about it. What we are going to be presenting to you is a proposed reorganization for the Department of Public Works. The purpose of the reorganization is multifaceted, and I think the most important element that I would identify is that we believe that it will improve customer service across the board. Importantly, we have recognized that there is a very significant need to focus a great deal of energy in our Public Works Department on transportation and infrastructure related services. And one of the positive outcomes of this proposed reorganization is that our Department of Public Works really will be focused as its core objective on the support of our transit programs and the development of our transportation corridors. There are three other major elements in the reorganization proposal. One is a consolidation coordination of our solid waste activities under the Department of Environmental Resources, who already is responsible for coordinating the waste energy program and the collections contracts. Moving our building function under planning and development services, and we believe that that will result in a very positive realignment for our customers, who will see much more cohesive one-stop shop. And then finally, a movement of our abandoned vehicle abatement program from the Department of Public Works to the Department of Environmental Resources. Under their code enforcement program, we feel that in fact is a marriage or a partnership that should be very, very successful. I want to thank Public Works staff, Assistant CEO Stan Rice and his staff, and all the work that they have done in working through the details of this proposal. Stan's going to provide you an overview. But once again, this is something that I think is going to be very positive and have some very good long-term outcomes.
Good morning, Chairman Simon, members of the board, Ms. Robinson, Mr. Krosnick, Stan Risen, Chief Executive Office. Joining me at the staff table this morning is Christy Amaral, who prepared our presentation for this morning. I'm going to be very brief because I think Mr. Robinson highlighted a lot of what we're here to discuss this morning, but we're here to request your approval of the realignment of several programs that are currently operated under our Public Works Department. I'll briefly share with you the process we went through, some of the benefits, many of which have already been outlined by Mr. Robinson, our recommendations, and then we'll open it up for questions at the end. We're basically focusing on three program areas, and those involve the areas of solid waste, entitlement programs, and code enforcement. As part of our process, we began, Mr. Robinson actually for several years has had this vision and shared with us that vision and met with Diane Ha, Ron Freitas, and Sonia Herigfeld, and together we discussed the concept. From there, we went out and actually met with staff of both the landfill and development services very early in the process. Not only to control the rumor mill, but to gain their solicit their ideas and comments, suggestions, feedback. And then from there, we went out and began evaluating all the details that go along with this proposed realignment, the budget, the staffing, and those types of things. Essentially, the realignment, some of the transfers that are in your agenda this morning involve four areas, landfill division, our development services, which we're recommending be renamed to our building permit division, land development activities, and abandoned vehicle abatement. And under the landfill division, we're recommending that that program be transferred to the Department of Environmental Resources to bring together and essentially to marry our landfill activities with all our other solid waste activities, including recycling, AB 939 compliance, tire grants, food processing byproducts. Now we'll be able to address these as a more cohesive unit. This involves the transfer of 17 positions, all the positions currently under the landfill budget, as well as one accountant, two that would be transferring from Public Works Administration. Under the building permit division, we're recommending that those functions be transferred to our Planning and Community Development Department. That involves the transfer of 32 positions, as well as an account clerk 3 and an administrative clerk 2 that are currently in our Public Works Administration wing. The third area focus for realignment is actually keeping the land development activities, which includes parcel maps, tentative maps, transportation and encroachment permits, keeping those in Public Works and moving them to the Public Works Engineering Division. And finally, abandoned vehicle abatement, that entails two part-time positions that would be moved out to Environmental Resources. Our hope here is to work in a more cohesive fashion with our code enforcement activities, which occur out of our Department of Environmental Resources. There are a number of benefits that we feel are associated with the proposed realignment. We're going to highlight just three. First, we want to bring, we targeted programs that involve more than one department. For example, in solid waste, our landfill was under Public Works, but our recycling was under Environmental Resources. So we looked for closely interrelated programs that we thought could thrive better under one leadership umbrella. We also, this isn't about change for change's sake, because we don't, that normally doesn't accomplish much, but what we believe was happening here is we're creating an environment under a centralized leadership that will promote greater communication and greater collaboration, resulting in improved customer access to services, improved processing times, and improved program cost savings. Finally, as Mr. Robinson outlined at the beginning, we believe that this is going to allow the Public Works Department to focus on their core program responsibilities as it relates to transportation planning, transit, road bridge, and storm drain construction. Interestingly, we're in the middle of our Public Works Director recruitment, and in analyzing a lot of the applicants, it was amazing how many of them pointed out that they had no landfill experience. And in some ways, that just kind of authenticated some of the recommendations we have before you today of, for example, moving landfill to environmental resources where we believe there's better alignment. So essentially, we're here to request your approval of realigning our landfill operations and environmental resources, our development services, that we rename it to our building permit division and move it under planning and community development, and that we move our abandoned vehicle abatement operations under the Department of Environmental Resources. And then there's a number of staffing and budget actions outlined in the report. I would like to correct one recommendation that is reflected in there, and that's under staffing impacts. It refers to a reclassification study of an accountant two. We would recommend that be revised to be a reclassification study of an account clerk three. I would like to acknowledge Diane Haw and her staff, Ron Freitas and his staff, and Sonia Herigfeld and her staff, as well as our HR department, who put tremendous hours and effort into helping work through the details associated with this proposal. And that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions from staff members?
Yeah, I just got one, Mr. Chairman. Before George Temple left, he came to the board, and we talked about what they were going to do in public works to make the permits and everything so much faster. Does this play into that?
We think this is just going to continue the momentum that began when that one-stop permitting concept was presented to you. That concept has already met with a good deal of success. We have hired a development coordinator who now is kind of a customer advocate who works on bringing and helping customers work through all the different agencies that are involved in this. Plan check time has been reduced from about 6 weeks. I think they're averaging about 18 days now. And so we think by bringing this under planning, instead of now dealing with four agencies involved in the permitting process, we're reducing it to three. We think it's just going to continue the momentum that's already begun. Also, another side benefit, we're looking at doing a new IT system, new building or permitting system as part of the one-stop-shop concept. Now, all the players are working together and developing their requirements in a very coordinated and cohesive manner.
Okay. So you have two players sitting back there in the back, about the third row down, second, third row. Okay.
Yep.
So what do you players think about that?
You're nodding his head.
Okay. It's always nice when we get a nod, you know, because we don't want you to do something you don't want to do.
Okay, any other questions? If not, we have four motions to...
I just had one I'm just curious about. On the abandoned vehicle abatement program, you have two part-time positions for that. Why do you have that rather than one full-time position?
Somebody would like to address that.
Cheaper.
Good morning, Sonia Herigfeld, Director of Environmental Resources. Currently, we have there's two part-time positions for the abandoned vehicle. Both of those are retired law enforcement officers, and so they split the shifts and the time that they work. And actually, it can be beneficial for the department because it cost us less overall funding to support that position, where with a full-time position on a non-retired person, we'd be paying salaries, benefits, retirement, etc. And with part-time positions, it allows us, specifically with retired folks, it allows them to work a minimum number of hours. They can only work 900 hours annually. And we receive the benefit of part-time, and we don't have to pay as much as we would if we had a full-time benefited person.
Okay, well, that explains it. I was wondering why. Okay.
So you, before you leave, so you're saying now that all these cars we've seen parked along the road, that they have to grow there for a while, you know, and they have yellow tags all over them. Are they going to be leaving the roadside faster?
Well, we will be working on that. We've got a couple ideas as far as the incorporation of code enforcement in the abandoned vehicle program that should help to address some of those issues that are associated with the cars being out there a little bit longer. The other thing, my understanding is that one of the gentlemen who has been working part-time has had some medical issues, and so we've really only had one part-time person working as opposed to, you know, a year ago where they had two part-time individuals working.
Okay, we better get it well then. Right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, we have...
Very good.
As you say, I'd like to move approval to the
four
staff recommendations on page one and the fifth one on page two.
Yeah, I'd like to second it. We have a motion to second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So ordered.
Thank you.
Correspondence?
This board has received a letter from the San Joaquin Regional Rail Commission requesting the appointment of a board member to an advisory committee to explore commuter rail services within the Central Valley.
Do we have any volunteers?
I'll do it, Mr. Chairman. I'm on.
I knew you would. I'm an old railroad man.
I'm fairly familiar with the issues for being on the rail committee.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Good tip for me.
This board has received a copy of the Stanislaus County. Well, you go ahead and read that.
This board has received a copy of the Stanislaus County Employees Retirement Association, Stan Sarah, comprehensive annual financial report for the fiscal years ended June 30, 2006 and 2005.
We accept this report. Any board member have a report? Nope. Legislative, fiscal, and management report.
I would just like to remind board members and those in the audience that next Tuesday evening will be Chairman Simon's last meeting. We do have a couple special events planned and would encourage you and invite everybody to attend.
It's mandatory for you back in the back of the room.
And it's mandatory for those of you in the back of the room.
Thank you. This meeting is adjourned to closed session.
Before adjournment, before announcement of closed session, I indicated to you some time ago that there was an additional law passed, I think now about a year ago, that requires board members to discuss any conferences or anything that they have gone to and come back and publicly mention them. Supervisor DeMartini did attend the CSAC annual conference along with CEO Robinson and myself, and I'm sure that Supervisor DeMartini would make a quick report in compliance with that law.
Okay. Well,
very good.
Nice of a county council that notified me that in advance.
Yes.
I did get down there to Anaheim 2 weeks ago. Dick Monteith, the newly elected supervisor, was there with me. And I went to several of the conferences, and it's always nice to be able to network with the other supervisors in the state and see that we do have similar projects and problems that we're working on, and we've networked together to see how each one of us is going to try and address it. We've worked on, you know, economic development and transportation, which is a problem throughout California. So the program was pretty good, and I did pick up an award for our Chairman Simon, given by CSAC for 32 years of service, which is the most of any supervisor in the state of California.
Thank you. And you're going to present that to me on next Monday, right? If you haven't lost it.
No, I haven't lost it. It's actually a nice little thing. And
good.
I'm not sure what day it is I'll present it to you, but whatever day it's scheduled, I'll do it.
Thank you. And thanks for picking it up for me. I appreciate it.
And I think I need to accept the responsibility for not speaking with you. That was an assignment that I had accepted, and I just forgot. My apologies.
Okay, is that it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, we have two items in closed session. The first is conference with labor negotiator. Mr. Robinson will be the designated negotiator for the county. The labor organizations, SEIU, AFSCME, United Domestic Workers, and the County Attorneys Association. That's pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. Second matter, conference with real property negotiator. The property is the SBHC Health Center at 1501 Claus Road. Negotiating parties, again, Mr. Robinson will be negotiator for the county. The negotiations will concern both the price and terms of sale. That's pursuant to Government Code Section 54954.5B. We do not anticipate any closed session announcements.
What section code was that?
54954.5B.
I've asked the chair and the CEO and the assistant chair to excuse me from this meeting. I felt that I was not necessary for me to participate in a wage issue that will be going on long after I leave, so my input would not be important in that sense. Thank you.